Hello and good day, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Magic the First Pioneers podcast. This podcast is all about the Pioneer format, and we keep our listeners up to date with what is new, interesting, and powerful in the world of Pioneer. I'm your host, Kevin Finkel, and I'm joined here by my co-host and one of our favorite recurring guests.
Yes.
Bit of a cold today, don't mind me.
Hey, everybody, it's Ryan. Good morning from Japan, or good evening, wherever you are. Looking forward to talking about today's topic with our guest.
How's it going, everyone? It's your recurring Pioneer Grinder, Harry 13 here, to give you the lowdown on one of my favorite decks in the format. I've played this deck so much, and I'm going to give you the lowdown of how to, you know, a general understanding of what the deck does and, you know, how to play it and how to play it well.
So, yeah.
You know, you've been doing what we kind of all dream of, which is taking one deck that not a lot of other people are playing it and winning so much that it is insisting itself upon the meta. You know, I feel like you've kind of proven blue-black as a dominant deck in the format. And that's, you know, that's something exciting about Pioneer, that maybe it's small enough you can do that. But I think it's definitely worth digging into this deck. I think that more people should be playing it. You know, we'll probably get into about, like, whether or not it's hard to break into, whether it's an easy deck to pick up, but definitely a lot we want to go over the deck. We want to go over a recent deck list. I know that you're also preparing for a big event this weekend. We want to talk a little bit about that, what you're thinking about with the deck, some of the other things you've tried, you know, kind of just do a deep dive episode. So this is one of our more competitive edged episodes, but it's also a dive on a deck that you guys may not have played or seen quite as much of. You know, there's not that much of it running around, especially if you're just playing on leagues or you've got local paper players. What am I missing, Ryan? What else?
I'm just saying, yeah, there aren't a lot of pilots with this. And yeah, this is one of those things that, you know, like you said, Harry 13 makes you recognize that this deck still exists and, you know, you better, you know, respect it. But just a little bit more. So yeah, this is one of our more competitive leaning episodes. We've done this before a couple times with various other decks. This is kind of to help people who are getting into Pioneer to kind of learn what the meta is like, to learn how the decks play, to learn how to play against the decks, etc., etc. We had on Martin before to talk about Sultai Reclamation before the bannings, and I feel bad about that. You know, but hopefully if that deck ever comes back, you know, people can still go back and listen to that as well. But yeah.
Ooh, do we want to quick pick your brain on that? Do you think that Reclamation could be unbanned right now? Or
That's a good question.
Paris?
That, you know, just 30-second answer. It doesn't have to be a long topic.
Personally, no. I don't think you can have Reclamation unbanned if Teferi, Time Raveler's still banned. I think the card is just inherently busted, and there's very few cards in the format that can deal with it. You know, CMC's Force, it dodges Abrupt Decay, and it doesn't have a natural Predator in Teferi, Time Raveler in the format. So I think if you allow Reclamation to be viable again, I think you're just asking for big trouble, because that the teamer version was still a very powerful choice, and I think it might just be too powerful, in my opinion.
Okay. Yeah, that's off topic for our episode today, but just had to get that out there, because it's one of those ones that, you know, we like to look at the ban list, and if there were things that were theoretically unbannable, it's probably on the more reasonable side, just compared to some of the very unreasonable things that are banned.
Well, let me just mention another card, Magma Opus. So imagine...
Oh yeah, I'd love it.
Yeah, imagine you have Magma Opus that allows you to have not only 4 Growth Spirals, but you have 4 Treasure Makers, so you're basically highly likely to have it down on turn 3.
Yikes. Yikes.
So, I think it would be a problem.
All right. Thank you for that. Let's go on. Why don't you lead it off, Ryan, with the first questions you've got about the blue-black deck?
Yeah, so we always kind of follow a similar outline for all of these podcasts that we do with our guests. So our first question is always, what is your deck? You know, what is UB Control? How does it win? And then after that, why is it your current deck? Why is it your current choice? So let's start with that first one. You know, please describe the deck and tell us how it wins.
So basically, blue-black control is a control deck.
Yeah, of course.
Basically, what it does is it takes advantage of efficient removal spells that black has access to, like Fatal Push, combines it with one of the most powerful spells ever printed, Dig Through Time, and you throw into that some efficient cycling spells like Censor, Hieroglyphic Elimination. You use cards like Sinister Sabotage that have a discard effect to fill up your graveyard. And also with the a relatively new card in the past year or two, Shark Typhoon, which is also basically a very versatile card. You can cycle it for zero to enable Revolt for Fatal Push, or you can use it to cycle to try and fill your graveyard, find lands. And you have the end game of either making massive sharks by taking advantage of Dig Through Time, and then having cards like Deer Hulk, which can flashback Dig Through Time for a really powerful finish. So yeah, so the deck basically plays out like a control deck, but you're always actively keeping the graveyard in mind at all times. So you cycle spells quite aggressively, like I cycle Censors, Shark Typhoons, and Hieroglyphic Illuminations quite aggressively to fill the graveyard, to inevitably cast Dig Through Time, and that normally turns the corner in most matches. So you're always basically using your mana every time, whereas control decks can sometimes fall prey to, you know, holding mana up for counter spells and people playing around them, and then you end up just wasting your mana you have access to in the early game, whereas this deck has a lot of very efficient spells combined with loads of ways to use your mana in the early game. So
is this the best Dig Through Time deck, just, you know, as far as like the choices that you have, the cards that you can get with it?
In my opinion, yes. I think Dig Through Time shines in control and combo strategies. There isn't really any combo strategies that I would really mention. Like Lotus is obviously a combo strategy, but I don't feel like Lotus is putting up any significant results, because I think the deck is inherently flawed after the ban of Underworld Breach. And I think this is the best shell, because I've said before that I think the only viable control decks you can play in Pioneer have to have access to black removal. You need to have Fatal Push in your deck. There's no other one mana removal spell that comes close to Fatal Push in the format, and I think because of that I'm only ever going to look at blue black. Someday, maybe when the mana bases are different, we can splash a third color. At this point in time, I don't think Sultai is good enough. There's not good enough reasons going to green now that Uro is banned. So yeah, I believe this is the best shell for Dig Through Time. You have so many efficient spells to fuel your graveyard really fast and take advantage of it.
Is this also the best Gear Hulk deck, you think?
I'm not sure. I would say so. I think Gear Hulk's only really playable in control strategies as well, and I think this is the only... I don't think it's the only viable control strategy, but I think it's definitely, in my opinion, the best control strategy you have access to in Pioneer. So yeah, I would say, and because of that, yeah, I would say Gear Hulk. This is the best Gear Hulk shell. You could, sure, you could splash for Magma Opus. I've done this in the past, but I've found that the Opus was often unnecessary, and it made you want to splash for red, and I don't think the splash was worth it.
Not yet, at least.
Not yet, at least, yeah. When mana bases hopefully improve, maybe.
Yeah, so last question for this part was, you know, why is this your current deck? You know, you lost Reclamation and then moved into this. Is there a reason for that? Did you look at anything else? Why is this your current deck?
Because basically, like, the top performing decks in the format, I felt like I had good matchups against. If you look at if you look at MTG Goldfish, you'll see decks like Niv-to-Light, Spirits, Phoenix. They're like the three most popular decks, and in my opinion, if you know the matchups well enough, I think these matchups are all favourable for blue-black. Niv-to-Light is very clunky. It plays at sorcery speed, so ultimately, although yeah, they do have a lot of powerful spells, they have to cast 5 mana. They have to spend 5 mana at sorcery speed to use them. They don't have the Fairy Time Raveler anymore to just brick your counter magic, and because of that, you have a lot of time to set up. And basically the way you win those matches is like a tempo strategy. you make a big chunky shark getting for chip damage whilst countering their spells. They have to eventually deal with the shark, that's fine. You just like set up so that they, when they spend their mana on Niv to light, bring to light or Niv or something, you just counter it and then try to get down another threat, and eventually you kill them by doing that. And against spirits, well, your fatal pushes trade up with their creatures. It's quite straightforward. And Shark Typhoon is really, really difficult for them to play around and deal with. And normally a 3/3 or 4/4 shark is lights out, because it takes care of one of their threats, and they have very little ways to beat it.
Okay.
And yeah, so. And then with Phoenix, some people get caught up with how many cards they have access to, because you see them playing cards like Treasure Cruise, Expressive Iteration, and it can feel quite overwhelming, but most of their cards don't do anything. There's a lot of air in the deck. Once you realize that and you take care of the threats that matter, i.e. the Phoenix and the Drakes, you eventually whittle them down to very little cards left in their deck, and you normally win through that. Putting Blast Zone to 4 is always really important, because it stops like a one-shot kill from Crackling Drake and maximize velocity if they have access to it. But yeah, overall, I just think those matchups I've had a lot of success with.
Okay.
In my experience.
That kind of answers the next two questions I was going to ask somewhat. Kevin, do you want to ask any questions?
Well, I'd be happy to. Why don't we go over the deck list?
I think that's what I was going to say.
Having talked a little bit about why you're playing it and everything. So I just linked in our little chat here, is this your most recent deck list? It looks like you just got a 5-0 on 7/29, which is the day we're recording this, so I'm assuming that's probably your most recent list.
Yeah, is this the one that's got Legion's End and Erebos's Intervention on it?
Yes, and I have seen you testing with that Erebos's Intervention, so that sounds right.
Yeah, this is the most recent list.
All right, so let's quick go over... So real quick, I want to go over lands, although I can't just skip over this. You know, there are a lot of good blue-black lands in this format, but I think that one thing you've always called out, and I want to draw attention to for anyone listening to this, is your utility lands. So do you want to quick go over those for the deck?
Yep.
The numbers and the reason.
Yep, so the first one that people will look at is probably Blast Zone, because obviously Field of Ruin, you know, it's there for a reason, but, you know, Field of Ruin is a genuinely... seen as a very much standard utility land when you're playing two colors in Eternal formats. So let's talk about Blast Zone. And Blast Zone's there basically as insurance against very aggressive strategies like Burn. Blue Insul decks are now popular. And traditionally, so it deals with them. It can act as a suit, like a mini Wrath at the expense of a land, which I think is definitely worth it if you're playing them game one. However, basically, when you're playing blue-black strategies, inherently, there's always been issues dealing with permanents that are not necessarily creatures or planeswalkers. So Blast Zone's basically to give you a hedge against, you know, Enigmatic Incarnation, like these big enchantments. So, you know, when your opponents are probably not doing too much in the early game, it gives you time to tick up your Blast Zones. So they're basically there to deal with any like pesky enchantments or other permanents that you can't deal with naturally with those two colours. So I like having access to two of them, because it means that I'm likely, if the game goes to the mid or late game, I'm almost guaranteed to have at least one. You know, I've at least seen one of them through the match or the game even. So yeah, they're basically there for very aggressive strategies and decks that play problematic permanents that I can't necessarily deal with my spells. The Field of Ruins, they're basically there as a way to deal with the Dreamwhite Angels, the book combo with Mutavault. I didn't want to have nothing that dealt with that, nothing that dealt with lands because of that. And also Mutavault's a very popular creature land that's played. So it's nice having access to Field Runes, and also there's a lot of five color decks. So sometimes you can get them by messing up with their mana base. And yeah, that's pretty much it with the utility lands.
Turns on Fatal Push as well.
Yeah, it's just another revolt thing, another revolt trigger, which is nice to have access to as well. So like, yeah, there's that as well.
I really like Shadow's Verdict in here. Is it currently the best board wipe you want to play in the format again?
I'd say so. It's always very close to an extinction event in Shadow's Verdict when you're playing blue-black. I don't think Languish is relevant anymore. There's just too much going on with the graveyards in the format. I think, obviously, Shadow's Verdict is a dead card, essentially, against Phoenix. But Phoenix isn't as popular as it once was. And I think like the Wraths have less impact against Phoenix than they do against the decks where they matter. Like the Green-White Angels decks, Shadow's Verdict is an absolute house. It's also very good against Spirits Game 1. They just don't have any counter spells for it now. Mm-hmm. So yeah, and it takes care of red-black Arcanist as well. So yeah, mm-hmm. I think Shadow's Verdict is just very powerful, and I want to have access to multiples in my main 60.
And I notice also you have a lot of like one-offs in this deck. Can you explain those real quick? Like, why only one? What's the use of them?
Well, let's keep going by kind of role here. So you're talking about the sweepers. You've got one Extinction Event, two Shadow's Verdict. As far as card draw, you're on 4 Dig Through Time, 2 Hieroglyphic Illumination. I think the Dig Through Time speak for themselves. As far as the Illumination slot, have you tried some other draw spells in that place? You know, I know there are some other good 4-mana ones, but you were saying you liked the cycling ability of this one?
Yeah, I think Illumination in this specific strategy is the best draw spell. If it wasn't for Dig Through Time, yeah, I think you would want to play something like the 4-mana Foretell spell, Behold the Multiverse. But the fact that you're playing Dig Through Time, and you're not playing Ops, you're not playing any you're not really playing any cantrips. You want to play cards like Illumination just to either in the early game, if you have a 2-lander, you want to have always the ability to try and cycle to find your land drops, but you also want to fuel your graveyard as fast as possible. I found that Behold the Multiverse was very clunky, and I think Narset, Parted of Veils is played quite a lot in this format in any blue deck, mm-hmm. and you don't want to fall prey to that card. Basically, Narset, Parted of Veils static ability isn't something I care about with this deck. It doesn't really affect me to a great degree. And
interesting.
Yeah, it's nice not having that to be an issue. And also, I just think Hieroglyphic Illumination is one of the best draw spells that Pioneer has. I think the fact you can cycle it for 1 mana is just great. And, you know, incidentally, you can flash it back with Gearhulk if you like. I think it's the best draw spell. And I think, yeah, because of that, it's just so versatile. It's just really, really good. I've always been super impressed with Illumination. Yeah, so that's why it's my go-to.
So as far as the counterspell slot is the next place I'll go, I'm seeing, you know, Force Sensor, those are kind of a cantrip / counterspell, but the real meat here is 1-negate, 4-sinister Sabotage. Any comments on alternatives there?
Yeah, so Sabotage is there. Again, it all comes down to fueling Dig Through Time. This is what the deck is doing. Your sole purpose in this deck is to try and fuel that Dig Through Time. You want to make your Dig Through Times as efficient as possible so you can double spell. And that's why Sabotage gets the nod over, you know, you see some people playing Void Shatter, there's definitely upsides. You know, it doesn't get hit by Mystical Dispute for 1 mana. It exiles, which is very relevant. You know, you've got Phoenix, you've got Croxa, but the Surveil, not only does it help you potentially get out of troublesome spots where you're trying to hit your fourth land drop, it's just the fact that it fuels the graveyard is just so important to the strategy overall. So that's why the 4 Sabotage. Now, Negate, and list before I've only played 4 Sabotage, 4 Sensor, but I feel like with Enigmatic Fires being a deck, Niv-to-Light, and yeah, those two are like the main ones. I felt like I wanted a negate in my 75, and I felt like there was enough non-creature spells, relevant ones that I cared about, for me to put the negate main. Essentially, if I could play a fifth sensor, I would actually play a fifth sensor, but I can't play a fifth sensor.
That's interesting.
Yeah, like sensor to me is just a wonderful card in this deck. It does everything you want it to. Has the, you know, its upside's huge. Countering a spell with sensor is amazing, but the cycling aspect of it's fantastic. I'd play five if I could, but because I can't, negate gets the nod. I think I've got a lot of efficient removal spells to not really care about creatures too much. It's just non-creature spells like Sorin, Imperious Bloodlord as well, that like people are playing vampires again. Yeah, that's like that matchup I feel okay overall, but if they get the turn 3 Sorin down, it can, you know, that can swing the matchup heavily. So yeah, that's why I'm playing Negate, and that's why I'm playing the Sabotages.
Any other counter spells you've tried in that Negate slot? Like, have you tried a Mystical Dispute or a Disdainful Stroke? Do those just not work in the main?
I've actually tried, like, Test of Talents. I've tried 2 Disputes, 3 Sabotage. I think they do, but I think there's just enough, like, non-blue decks in the format that I didn't really feel like the Disputes were giving me much of an upside, because, like, Disputes are great when your opponents are boarding in Disputes, if you know what I mean. But, like, game one, like, your Sabotages normally just do the job.
You know, you were just going over, you know, Collected Company, you were going over Sorin, some of those things it's nice to have the Negate for that wouldn't be useful to have the other ones.
Yeah, exactly. And Test of Talents, basically Sorin, and there's just enough spells, like the book as well. There's just a lot of spells that Test of Talents doesn't hit. Don't get me wrong, I think Test of Talents is a great card. Being able to steal Treasure Cruise from Phoenix, or if I'm playing the Mirror, stealing another Dig for Time, that's huge. But, like, there's enough, like, permanents, like planeswalkers in the format that I'd rather just have Negate. I'd rather just have the versatility.
What about Drown in the Lock?
So the issue with Drown in the Lock is, if you read, I mean, you look at cards like Dig Through Time, right? You look at cards like Treasure Cruise. Now, if you can see the issue there with Drown in the Lock, like, say you try and Drown in the Lock one of my spells, I Dig Through Time responds, my graveyard now has 2 cards, and you're trying to counter a 4 CMC spell, it just kind of counters it, doesn't it? So the fact that Del spells are a big part of the format, that's why I actually think Drown the Lock isn't good in Pioneer because of that, and I would actively tell people to not play the card.
Okay.
See, Ryan, I'm really glad you asked that, because I've heard Harry go over his spiel before, and I'm glad you set it up for him, because I think that is good information for a lot of people, because that card may be a bit of a trap in the format.
Yeah, it definitely is.
But I think I'll go to the last piece here, is the meat and potatoes of removal spells. So I've seen 1 Blood Chief's Thirst, 4 Fatal Push, 2 Heartless Act, 1 Hero's Downfall, and if we'll count it, a Cling to Dust.
Okay, so as you know, Fatal Push, in my opinion, is the best removal spell in Pioneer. This is why I play...
Yeah, 4 of those, no question.
It's basically the why I play black in the deck. I think Fatal Push is fantastic. And the format trades up with so many threats, and it just allows you to beat the creature decks. Blood Chief's First is, like, the next best thing to Fatal Push in terms of the 1 mana slot. That's why I'm playing it. It gives you the option to kill a Planeswalker if needed, but basically it's just... It's for those decks. It's for the decks that play turn 1 Llanowar Elf and you're like, oh, I really need to deal with that. That could be cause serious problem. Heartless Act, in my opinion, is the best removal spell at 2 mana. It's better than Doomblade. It's better than... what's the one from Dominaria? Destroy non-legendary creature.
Cast Out?
Cast Down, yeah. It's better than Cast Down.
Yeah.
Is it better than Power Word Kill?
Yeah, dude, there's too many dragons and stuff. Like,
too many dragons, yeah, I see that.
Like Niv, etc.
Yeah,
in my opinion, it's the most... it's the one with the least drawback. The drawback's, like, least impactful drawback, in my opinion.
Real quick, though, didn't we just get, like, that 2 mana, that 1 in the black, that's... it exiles a creature or planeswalker, and... Like, if you pay 4, it doesn't let them draw a card, but if you pay 2, they get to draw a card. And you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, well, I was actually going to say, like, it's actually kind of... That card, it's very difficult to choose between that and Hero's Downfall. I think that would be that slot. I have played it in Hero's Downfall slot before. I generally don't know which one is better, but I think overall, I'd rather cast 3 mana. Because I think allowing your opponent to draw a card is a massive drawback. The same thing, it's kind of similar to Assassin's Trophy, where the land, giving your opponent the land, ends up being a massive drawback. I think allowing your opponent to draw a card, so you're 2-for-1 in yourself with your removal, I don't really like it.
I like that one when we've seen it alongside Narset.
Yeah, exactly. It's good alongside Narset, but overall, I think you're paying 4 mana more often than not, but it's nice to have access to the two mana part of it. But I think I'm happier with Downfall for now, but I could change. That could change.
What? Sorry, one more. So how about Murderous Rider? I mean, I know you want to have a lot of stuff for Dig Through Time to eat through, but if you're only playing 1, I don't think it's that much of a downside. You just keep shuffling back in.
Well, I think it's just the two life. I think the two life is just a bit too much. Obviously, like, it's nice to have access to the creature, but the fact that it doesn't hit the graveyard, it can't be brought back with Torrential Gearhulk is another drawback. Yeah, I think overall it's just not as good as Downfall for what I want it to do.
Okay.
Literally, if it didn't get shuffled in, it actually might have been slightly better. But then it's technically a creature, so it can Gearhulk back anyway. So yeah, basically that's the reason. It can't be brought back with Gearhulk.
Yeah. All right, any other removal spells you want to touch on here, or can I just go over the last bits and pieces?
None that I want to touch over. Basically, like, obviously Cling to Dust is in here against Arcanist and Phoenix. Self-explanatory, it can be a cantrip, such low cost for its effect. Do you know what I mean? If you don't use it in a matchup, you can just cycle it for one mana and it's in your graveyard. Might allow you to draw another card later on in the game. It's Cling to Dust is a great magic card.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's it.
Okay, I guess the only thing I might say is, are you ever going up or down on the number of sweepers in your main deck? How, like, you're on three right now. Does that feel like the sweet spot, or are there times where you think that it should be more or less?
Rarely. I don't think I'll ever go up in sweepers. I'm probably more than likely to go down, like, one Shadow's Verdict. I think I could go 1-1. I think I'm happy with 2-1 right now, but it's actually quite close. I'm very close to, like, deciding should I have the second Shadow's Verdict, or should it be something else, like a more situational counterspell, or like a Search for Scanta. Like, I would consider Rewind again. Like, I really like that card in practice. Like, a lot of people don't like it in principle, but Rewind's always played out really well for me. But yeah, I think I would more than likely go down in one as opposed to going up.
I would say Rewind is kind of meta for you because you're so used to using Reclamation type decks.
Exactly, but I think right now, especially for this this tournament coming up tomorrow, I think there's going to be a lot of aggressive decks. Like, people who don't play Pioneer will tend to pick up like intuitive decks like Burn. So I think I'm happy with my current build for that.
We gonna talk about Ashiok real quick? Why that's in the name?
Yeah, let's go over the odds and ends. Yeah. So this fun of Ashiok, you want to talk about that one?
Yeah. So Ashiok's just another way to deal with non-land permanents, creature, planeswalker, non-land permanents, like enchantments. It's also just a way to... I hate playing control decks with only two win cons, because if someone plays an effect like Slaughter Games, it really... You know, if I'm playing against Nev and they go Slaughter Games game one, name Shark Typhoon, I have to rely on two Gearhulks to win me the match, and I think that's really, really difficult. Whereas if you give yourself another win con... like a good win con. I wouldn't say add a win con if it's bad for the sake of it. I think Ashiok's a good planeswalker, and I think Ashiok's criminally underplayed. And I think it fits into the deck well, and it does what I need it to do. It's also, I've got one in the board because I want to deal with decks that play like Goblank, where they're trying to target my graveyard synergy. So I want to be able to customize the deck to deal with that. And I think Ashiok's predominantly in there against Niv when they have Slaughter Games.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's just a generally powerful planeswalker for the value for 5 mana. Okay. And that's why it's there.
Any other?
All right, so the last bit is the 2 Gearhulk you've gone over and the 4 Shark Typhoon. Yeah. So that is the main deck 60.
Yeah.
No companion. That's...
No.
You know, no, there's not really one that's easily available, I don't think. Have you considered going up to 75 cards?
Oh, going up to 80 for Yorion?
Or yeah, 80 cards.
I've tried it before. Like, I tried blue-black Yorion before, but it just didn't synergize with Dig Through Time enough. You're playing a lot of cards that don't go to the graveyard, and I just think Dig Through Time is just too good not to play. And yeah.
Okay, then I'm happy to jump into the sideboard. This is always something that's very exciting to me. You know, maybe a little bit about what these are for, but you want to go over your 15-card sideboard and as well as some other things you've considered in there? Because I know that crafting a perfect sideboard can mean a lot for a big tournament like this.
Yeah, so I'll just go over my sideboard real quick. So my sideboard contains currently 2 Aether Gust, 1 Erebos Intervention, 1 Cling to Dust, 2 Kalitas, Traitor of Get, 3 Mystical Dispute, one Narset, Parter of Ales, one Shadow's Verdict, one End to the God Eternals, one Thoughtseize, one Legion's End, and one Ashiok Nightmare Muse. So I recently took Ugin out of the sideboard and replaced it with Ashiok, and I'll explain why as we go through. So Aethergust, it's kind of self-explanatory. It's a very good sideboard card against green or red strategies, or in this format, burn and basically the five color decks. So I always bring in two copies against burn, Niv, and Enigmatic Incarnation fires, because it's a way to deal with non-creature, non-planeswalker permanents, and it basically acts as a counterspell against the majority of the important cards in their deck for two mana.
And Bard class.
Mm-hmm. And Bard class, yeah. Bard class as well, which can be a problem. I also bring in one against Phoenix. Again, it's not really there for anything. It's basically there in case they're playing like Ral, is it Viceroy, or like another like Chandra, Torture Defiance or something like that. And it can also answer a Crackling Drake or Phoenix, but it's not as impactful against them. Erebos' Intervention, I like it because it's a life gain card for aggro. It's a removal spell, but it also deals with graveyards. So I'll bring it in against Phoenix, I'll bring it in against Burn, I'll bring it in against Rakdos and Mono Black. As I said, it can be a removal spell, or it can deal with any problematic cards in the graveyard. It's flexible, I like it. Cling to Dust, self-explanatory, graveyard interaction is always key, and you need it. It also gains life, which is great against Burn. And gaining life and interacting with the graveyard is great against Mono Black. And you have Kalitas. Kalitas is there for pretty much all the creature matchups. I even bring them in against Spirits when Kalitas doesn't even necessarily do much against Flyers. I normally still bring in one. The card's just great. The card, you know, when graveyard matters, the card just really shines, and it's a powerhouse. It's one of the main reasons, it's one of the main ways to beat Burn, basically. It's super important. I wouldn't go down to less than two Kalitas, I don't think, ever, unless aggro is no longer an archetype in the format. Same with like three Mystical Disputes. I think you need disputes between like Spirits, Phoenix, Blue Black, Niv to Light, Enigmatic Fires, Lotus. Like, the card's just so good against so many strategies, because blue has played quite a lot in Pioneer. I would play four if I had the room, but right now I'm playing three, and yeah, card's amazing. Best blue counterspell they printed in a while. Narset, Parted of Ales, I was playing two, I'm now playing one. Basically, in my opinion, I don't think you need Narset to beat Phoenix at all. I feel completely fine with the matchup and the way I've set my main 16, having extra like Cling to Dust in the sideboard to deal with them. I think that's been enough for me in the past, but having Narset's nice. It's basically just a card that's just good against reasonable control, good against Phoenix. I also bring it in against Lotus, which is obviously very good there, but you tend not to see Lotus that much right now, so it's normally not much of a problem. If Lotus was more of a deck, I'd probably play two, but I don't tend to see it, nor am I expecting it to show up anytime soon. They could be, you know, famous last words. But yeah, Narset, a one of, happy for it to be a one of for the foreseeable future. Then we have Shadow's Verdict. Again, so good that I've got a third one in my 75.
Mm-hmm.
It just annihilates Angels. I don't know, if I was an Angels player and I seen Shadow's Verdict getting cast, I would just scoop them up. It's so hard to beat. It's great against Rakdos Arcanist. It's great against Mono Black. It's great against pretty much all the creature strategies. You know, it dodges Mystical Dispute like for one mana, so it's just great. Enter the God Eternals is pretty much only for Burn, really. It's also brought in against like Mono Black and Rakdos as well, just because it's an impactful 5 mana spell. Gains you 4, makes a big threat. Mm-hmm. It mills your graveyard to give you access to maybe that copy of Cling to Dust or Fuels a Dig Through Time. Card's just very good. and I like playing one against aggressive strategies. I wouldn't bring it in against spirits. Don't bring it in against decks that play blue. So I wouldn't bring it in against like blue Insol either, just because Mystical Dispute is too much of a blowout when you're paying 5 mana and your opponent casts that spends 1 mana to counter your spell. So those are the aggressive decks I wouldn't bring it in against. And Thoughtseize is a one of. Probably raise some eyebrows, but I think it's nice to have access to basically a card that essentially operates similar to Mystical Dispute, but takes care of it. Like, the deck just folds to Thought Distortion, and that's one of the main issues. So having access to like a Thoughtseize to maybe pinch one out of your opponent's hand, or sometimes you need to, you know, if you've got an Ashiok in hand and you want to slam it down and the coast isn't quite clear because your opponent's got mana up, then having like that one Thoughtseize is nice. But I don't think I want to play Thoughtseize in multiples in the deck. I don't think the deck really needs it, but because of cards like Thought Distortion, I thought, especially in Enigmatic Fires, they play an 80 card deck, so it's unlikely they would have Thought Distortion like within their first like 15-20 cards. So I like having access to the one Thoughtseize to potentially take care of that. And Legion's End is there for Rakdos mainly, because your spot removal doesn't line up well against their threats, because they can recur them quite easily. Also good against Insol if they ever Insol artifact their Darksteel Citadel. It's a way to deal with that. It doesn't destroy, so I like Legion's End for that. It's also just generally very good against aggressive creature decks. And the second copy of Ashiok's Nightmare Muse, it was an Ugin, but I just felt overall Ugin was too expensive. And I like Ashiok for Mono Black and Rakdos. What I actually do now is I take out the fourth copy of Dig Through Time and I take out one Gearhulk, because I feel like they just have too many copies of Go Blank. So this gives me more of a win con that plays to the board instead of the graveyard, so I don't get punished when my opponent slams Go Blank turn 3 and I can't counter it. So I like changing the strategy slightly there, and it's also still very good against Enigmatic Incarnation as well. And yeah, it's just generally a powerful Planeswalker to cast, and I like having access to the second copy in the 75. So that's my sideboard. That's the 15 cards.
I was going to ask about the Thoughtseize real quick. So what's the blue-black one?
Thought Erasure.
Yeah, Thought Erasure. Why not have that? If you're only playing one, it gives you the the ability to put one card into the graveyard with Surveil 1, you know, which helps, you know, fuel your graveyard a little bit better.
It dodges Mystical Dispute, basically. Okay. Like, Mystical Dispute is played as pretty much 3 to 4 copies in most of the blue sideboards. You're bringing in Thoughtseize against the blue decks predominantly. You're even bringing it in against Spirits. I like bringing it in as a one-off against Spirits. I wouldn't bring it in against most other creature matchups like Mono Black, Rakdos, or Burn. But yeah, it's because it has... Basically, it's if Thought Erasure costs double black, I'd probably... Not double black, but black colorless, I'd probably play it over it, but it doesn't. And I think the Thoughtseize is better than Agonizing Remorse. And yeah, that's why, pretty much.
Okay. I mean, it's just strange to not see 4 main in a control deck that's black.
Well, the issue with it, right, is I like playing Thoughtseize in decks that are proactive. So if I had, like, say, 4 Narsets and, like, another, like, Planeswalker heavy tap out control deck, I'd play the Thoughtseize, but because you're very draw go, you don't really gain much from sniping a card at your opponent's hand and then just draw go. So that's why I tend not to play Thoughtseize in these decks.
Okay.
But if I had
so how about other kinds of discard spell? What about a Necromentia, or there's the blue black one we were just talking about, not wanting to play a blue card?
Yeah, so like I've tried Go Blank before. Eventually, I just realized it wasn't impactful enough from my side. Necromentia and Unmoored Eagle were generally cards I would consider. Generally thinking about Necromentia to take care of like Enigmatic Incarnation, because I feel like once you take that card out of their deck, the matchup's like very easy. Niv, it's kind of awkward because it doesn't really impact that much, because if you take Bring to Light and they just slam Niv-Mizzet, then... You know, or if you take Niv-Mizzet and they just go Bring to Light Valky, then it's just not really that impactful there. And I don't think there's enough decks. Like, maybe Phoenix as well. If you take out Arclight Phoenix with Necromentia, then the matchup gets a lot easier. Yeah, that's one I would generally consider. And
okay.
maybe it is good enough, because maybe against like Lotus, there's like cards that you can just Necromancer out, and then the matchup gets a lot easier.
So this is fun. You know, you've won enough that you've got a lot of deck lists online. I can go back and look at some of your other things you've tried. I see that the Ashiok is kind of a replacement for, used to run one of Ugin the Spirit Dragon. Do you want to talk about that and why you're no longer running?
Yeah, basically it's just Ashiok's a lot cheaper. I felt like Ugin was too niche and it would only come in against the Fires deck and maybe Niv. Mm-hmm. I brought Ashiok in because against like Mono Black and Rakdos, I said that there was too many copies of Go Blank. So basically what I do now is I take out one copy of Dig Through Time, one Gear Hulk, so I can bring in Ashiok to play to the board as opposed to trying to win through my graveyard. Because I felt like Go Blank was just very, I was getting a lot of splash, like I was getting caught in the crossfire, because that card is there for Phoenix, but it's incidentally good against me because I rely fairly heavily on the graveyard. Whereas now this gives me the access to having a more play to the board plan instead of the graveyard to help combat, you know, getting done by Go Blank essentially. But it's still...
So, Ryan, if it's all right, I think that's a very good transition to the next thing that I really wanted to talk about, which is cards against blue-black, which ones are good and are not good. So one thing that really made me want to talk about this is that I've seen a lot of people building sideboards, and they'll be like, oh, you know, that's in my sideboard to beat control. And I feel like a lot of times they're playing some cards, and I'm just like, does that really beat the blue-black control that's in this format? You know, it'll be sometimes something like with Graveyard Recursion, and it's like, you know, they've got a lot of exile removal. Is that really the right answer? So I'm very interested to hear what cards are very good, especially sideboard cards, as answering control decks.
You know, like, this like control what are you
specifically.
Yeah.
But I also want to hear, what are the trap cards? Like, what are the ones you've seen people bring in, and you're like, that card is not good against control. Yeah. You are making your deck worse.
Yep, so cards that are good against control. So, obviously, Thought Distortion is an absolute house against this deck. I hate Thought Distortion because of that. It's very hard for me to... I mean, I can beat it, but it's very hard. Like, I need to have, like, lands. I need to have, like, a big... You know, I need to have had pressure on the board. And I need to be able to, like, you know, either, like, cast a Gear Hulk in response, or make a big shark in response, so that I'm applying pressure. As they're essentially, more often not, when you cast Thought Distortion, you take your turn off to do it. But yeah, that card's very good. Mystical Disputes, Dovin's Veto, like very efficient or uncounterable counter spells.
Here, so let's talk other discard real quick. Like, are Thoughtseizes good against you if they weren't already sideboard? If they weren't already main deck, or is bringing in Thoughtseize Duress gonna be pretty strong?
Yeah, I mean, it basically just like allows you to rip my hand apart, and you know, if you have a spell that you want to resolve and stick around for a turn, like Dreadhorde Arcanist, then yeah, discard spells are very good, because you know, say I'm against Rakdos, I believe that matchup's quite difficult for blue black because basically you just have too much hand attack, and you get too much like discard 2-for-1s, and you know, once a Dreadhorde Arcanist sticks and you basically get to untap with it and I can't kill it, then it's pretty hard for me to come back at that point. So I think discard spells are the way to go. Mystical Disputes.
And you've talked about you talked pretty heavily about Go Blank. Are other discard spells good if they're just like, you know, opponent discards two cards, or is it just Go Blank because it's hitting your graveyard as well?
Well, I think like 2-for-1s generally are pretty good. Like Mind Rot's fine. I wouldn't recommend Mind Rot because you have Go Blank, but like you know, the Mind Rot aspect of Go Blank is a problem as well. But the main issue for me is the graveyard. The fact that it discards my graveyard is like very annoying, frustrating, because it's hard to recover, because you're relying on your Dig Through Times to pull you back into the game, and you're basically you get from nearly being able to cast one for 2 mana to, oh, I've only got 6 lands in play and it's going to cost 8 mana to cast, so if I draw them I just have really clunky hands at this point, and that's how I lose the game. So yeah, so Go Blank, discard effects in general are pretty good. 2-for-1s, like Colgan's Command can be annoying as well in that sense. You know, destroy Gear Hulk, discard a card can be annoying. Cards like Slaughter Games, you know, they're quite effective. Take away one of my win cons.
Yeah, I was going to ask that. Are those kind of effects strong, or are they not worth bringing
in? I wouldn't bring them in. If you have slaughter games, it can't be countered, so yeah, it can be quite frustrating. Like, I normally have enough win cons to win anyway. I don't think they're that effective, but they're not bad either.
They buy some time.
Exactly. Cards like, you know, if you're playing like a mono red aggro deck, cards like Chandra, Torture Defiance is quite a difficult card to deal with. Roiling Vortex obviously is a very frustrating card that people bring in. I have very few ways to deal with Roiling Vortex, and it gives you a sense of inevitability. It's not unbeatable by any stretch. You know, I can make big sharks and out-tempo the players, but it is quite difficult to deal with. Yeah, they're the ones I can think of.
How about
of.
Big uncounterable creatures like Coma? Is that a big problem? Or is that kind of not worth the trouble?
Not really, because I basically never board out Heartless Axe against like control decks anyway. So, and most of the decks that play that normally have some sort of creature. So I don't think Coma, Chandra, Awakened Inferno, the uncounterable one, can be quite problematic. But I think Coma is a bit of a trap. I wouldn't recommend Coma, to be honest. I think other cards that are traps are like Soul Guide Lantern. People sometimes bring that in, and I'm just like, what are you? I don't really have anything you want to target with that. And I feel like exile in my graveyard without any like card advantage just seems like at the cost of a card doesn't seem worthwhile to me. Rest in Peace is probably on the cusp of.
I was gonna ask about that one.
I don't really know. I think it's like just good enough, but I wouldn't recommend going out your way to board them in unless you have like no other cards. It's one of those cards where it's not bad. It can be good. Like if I draw like 3 Digfruit times in a row, yeah, it's great. But like it doesn't really do enough for me at the cost of a card. That's why Goldblank's so good, because not only do you exile the graveyard, you also gain 2 cards essentially by causing me to discard.
And with something like Rest in Peace, if you know there's different decks that could bring that in. If you're Green White Angels bringing in Rest in Peace, good idea or bad idea?
A
deck with pressure like that versus a deck like Enigmatic would also have Rest in Peace in the sideboard, but is a much slower deck.
Yeah, I'd say the Angels deck's fine bringing it in if they have cards they want to cut for it. Incarnation probably less so. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Monastery Mentor, actually, that's another one. We're playing Jeskai. Jeskai Ascendancy or 4-color. Like, Monastery Mentor is a real, real difficult card to deal with.
It's like...
Interesting.
I was going to say, how about Clothis? It's kind of like a, you know, Vortex, and doesn't have to become a creature, so it doesn't get hit by Verdict either, right?
Clothis is, for me, kind of similar to Goldblank. Like, it's not, like, unbeatable, but it is a problem, and it can be quite frustrating to deal with, especially if it comes down turn 3, because often I find that you end up getting taken out by it long term.
Yeah.
So, I would agree. Clothis is a reasonable one to bring in as well.
Here, I've got a few more on my list. How about Shaper Sanctuary?
Shaper Sanctuary is another good one. It depends how my hand lines up. Like I play like Blast Zones, so I have ways to deal with it. But yeah, Shaper Sanctuary is another decent one. It's so low cost, and it will normally net you at least a card. So bear in mind, I do play a lot of Rasp post board, but yeah, I think it's reasonable. Another one I would say is Voice of Resurgence. That card can be problematic. That card can be an issue. That's probably one of the reasons why Legion's End is in there as well, to deal with that card, because. It's just always it's almost always a 2-for-1 against me. Good thing for me about Voice Resurgence is it's a 2/2, so it doesn't apply too much pressure, but it just stops me from like being able to interact with my opponent's turn, which can be problematic, especially if your deck's playing Collected Company. So,
yeah.
I mean, honestly, just a real quick observation, if you get rid of like that Thoughtseize, this is like a really budget deck. Like it's seriously? Like 250 for a tier 1 deck. I like it. Sorry, I just wanted to make that observation.
Or about $75 on, or yeah, without the Thoughtseize, about $60 on Modo.
It's really good.
It's a really low price deck. The deck doesn't cost a lot, and it's won me at
half of that Shark Typhoon.
Yeah. I mean,
on Modo at least.
Yeah, I think.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I think I've made a lot of profit from this deck if we're taking the price of it into account. Yeah, definitely.
If you don't mind moving on to the next part real quick, I know we already kind of talked about matchups. You talked about, you know, like, Niv, and you talked about Phoenix and stuff. Were there any other matchups that you're worried about?
Yeah, so basically Rakdos is one of the main ones. I think Rakdos is the main matchup I struggle with at times. You basically have to mulligan very conservatively. You want to keep as many cards as possible, and you basically have to be very, very, very conservative with cycling Hieroglyphic Illumination, because it's a 2-for-1 and you need your 2-for-1s. It's kind of like Control versus Jund in Modern. You know, you have like powerful mana sinks in Gearhulk and Dig Through Time, so what you need to do here is make sure you don't bin the lands when you have to discard at random. Like, not at random, but discard from like Kroxa. You want to make sure you hit your land drops to give you the best opportunities to cast your more impactful spells off the top of your deck. So that's essentially what happens. You end up going into top deck mode, and you want to make sure you've got the best opportunity possible to cast your most powerful spells. So don't aggressively discard your lands. You should be discarding your spells first and your lands last, essentially.
Got it.
Unless they're 2-for-1s spells that you can immediately cast, you know what I mean? And and your spot removal just doesn't line up well against them, because they have a lot of recursive threats, and you lose games where you just draw 1-for-1 removals and they just come back. The creatures come back and essentially just outgrind you that way.
Any other decks? Any other matchups you're worried about?
Not really, to be honest. Like, I think if Lotus came back, I'd be a bit underprepared for that deck. I think Lotus is one that could cause me problems. Traditionally, it's quite a close game, but normally they have like ways to get Thought Distortion fairly quickly, so that can cause problems. That matchup revolves around like how many Shark Typhoons I can resolve, like cycle and still be alive and put a clock on them. I'd say Rakdos and Lotus would be the two ones I'd be kind of worried about. I used to be worried about Burn a lot more, but I think my deck's very well built to beat that strategy now. So yeah, it's basically those two archetypes that I worry about.
Okay. Kevin, any other questions or anything else you want to pick his brain?
No, I think that's pretty good. Yeah. Anything you're looking for the deck, as you're looking at future sets coming out, what are some holes or some kind of weak points in the deck where you wish that a better role player or a better card would come out for it?
Yeah, I think like basically another draw spell potentially that's, you know, I think Illumination's great, but I don't think it's like super powerful or anything. Maybe like another like 4-mana spell that's like really like impactful. I think like people thought like Behold the Multiverse was going to be it, but it just ended up not quite being that card. I think just a stronger counter spell. I think Pioneer could maybe do with a card like Mana Leak. I think Mana Leak would be something amazing. I'd love Mana Leak. That'd be a fantastic upgrade to the deck, and I think you wouldn't need to play cards like. So I think the issue is like, I think the 3-mana counter spells are necessary, but I think they're just like half a mana too clunky, if that makes sense. Like, I would love to see a 2-mana counter spell that actually could replace the sabotages. If I could get Mana Leak, that'd be amazing. And I'd probably
you don't want like Thought Scour or something.
I mean, I think Thought Scour, we all know if Thought Scour is printed, it would push the Del spells too far. Dig Through Time and Dig Through Time and Treasure Cruise can't exist in this format if they print any spells of that level or any more like playable fetch lands alongside the Fabled Passages. So I think we're in the rare format that can have Dig Through Time and Treasure Cruise, and they're just okay to play. I think they're like, you know, remember last time we spoke about how Uro, like I said before, like I could see Uro getting a ban. I think we're very close to that now with the dig through time and treasure cruise of the format. I'd be very surprised if I was here next year talking about Pioneer and those two cards were legal. If, you know, hopefully if Wizards continue to support Pioneer, and I think if they do, then those two cards will probably be on their list of bannable cards. And you know, if they do decide to ban them, I wouldn't be shocked, surprised, or upset. So yeah, I think any more efficient graveyard cantrips would probably be too much. A cantrip, I think that's one. I think something better than Opt. I don't think Opt is that good. I don't really like it. I never play it. In these decks, you don't have any specific cards. You just have a lot of removal, and you've got enough counter spells that I don't think you need Opt. But something like, I don't know. I don't know if Serum Visions would do it, or some sort of cantrip.
That's good.
Yeah. Oh, thought Scar. I don't know.
Yeah, I was gonna say I had one last question, but if you wanna finish your thought, go ahead.
The last thing I was gonna say is, like, I really want to play a third color, but there's not a way to play a third color, or I don't think green's good enough anymore without Uro. Or you know, I really want to play Grixis or something, but there's just nothing. There's maybe just a land that makes, you know, just an improvement to the mana bases in Pioneer in general is something I always want to push for. That's about it.
Okay. So, we were talking about bannings a little bit. And, of course, blue-black is no stranger to bannings. You know, we started off with blue-black inverter. And then, you know, you had your Sultai Reclamation deck had some bannings hit it. So, I wanted to ask you, this is kind of like a bonus question. How does, you know, the current, you know, version of blue-black control differ from those other past blue-black decks? You know, for example, like Inverter and Reclamation. Is it played very similarly? Is it like a different type of deck entirely? Like, how would you describe that?
Yeah, they're different decks in the sense of the playstyle. Like, Inverter was very much a tap-out control deck. It was very much, you know, you cared about what was in your graveyard at all times. You would mulligan the deck quite aggressively because the deck could win with very few resources. So, you know, you were just very tap-out control. Mm-hmm. And your opponent would play completely differently against you because, you know, they always had the fear of the combo back in their mind, so they had to play quite tactically and carefully and tiptoe around you, whereas, you know, blue black controls draw goal. You know, they just try and slam their threats in and hope one sticks. They're not fearing anything. Do you know what I mean? They're maybe playing around a Shark Typhoon or something.
Mm-hmm.
But the decks play very differently in that sense. Reclamation was different in the sense that, you know, you didn't play Dig for Time. You just played like Thassa's Interventions. You played Uro's. You know, Uro was your delve spell essentially. Like, Uro was your main threat. You would play spells that could take advantage of you generating a massive amount of mana, like Thassa's Intervention. That was one of my favourites to play. Just look at the top 20 cards of your deck and use cards like Tassigar on the sideboard with its ability, given the amount of mana you have access to. You could just use it so much. I think there was like a little bit less counter spells in that one, but not by too much. But yeah,
So I was going to say real quick, you know, there's a lot of people that, you know, kind of got angry after the bannings. Maybe they stopped playing Pioneer. Do you think they would enjoy playing blue-black control?
If they enjoyed playing Sultai Reclamation, definitely. I think the deck's really good. I think casting Dig for Time is a very rewarding experience. And I think the deck...
Always. Yeah. Just don't take 5 minutes each dig through time.
No, exactly. But, like, the deck rewards understanding of the meta, understanding of your opponent's strategies. It awards experience in the format. So if you feel like you understand the meta game, where it is, how each deck plays out, then you'll be rewarded by playing this deck. But by no means, and I'm not trying to blow my own trumpet by saying this, but like, blue black control isn't an easy deck to play. You get punished for not understanding how games play out. You know, I've had people coming to me before saying, oh, how'd you beat how do you beat Phoenix? They draw so many cards, and then they obviously don't understand, like, it doesn't matter about the quantity of the cards they have, just focus on the cards that have quality, as a lot of the cards just do nothing, they just spin wheels. It's just stuff like that. It's just understanding what matters in each game, and if you do and you play the deck, you'll get rewarded for it.
All right. Anything else you wanted to add, Ryan? I think that might be a good place to wrap up the show here. I think that's a good
point to end it.
Thank you so much for coming on and doing this. This has been, I think, one of the most informative, just like straightforward, nonstop action about the blue-black deck. And if am I wrong? Had you already written something up about this deck for the tech team?
Yeah, so I have a deep dive on our tech team Patreon, which has a Twitter. It's at tech team 9. We have a lot of different articles on different formats, and yeah, there's quite a few of us, and I did a deep dive into blue-black and how to prepare for each matchup as well.
Yeah, I wanted to make sure to shout that out. If anyone likes to read their information rather than just hearing it, or wants to get a review of anything that was just talked about, as well as to see deck techs about a lot of other great decks, that's a place to go ahead and do it. If you guys want to follow us to hear more information about Pioneer, current events, outstanding decks, players, memes, whatever it is, at MTG Pioneer is our Twitter handle, best place to find us there, as well as you can find a link to our Discord, which is where we post all of our information, and you can easily contact us.
Yeah, and we also put up today's list that Harry was talking about, or sorry, Martin was talking about, whichever, right? Harry's
skill. Yeah, honestly, it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. It's all good.
But yeah. But I pinned the list. You'll find it in the podcast area of our, of our Discord. So you know, check that out if you want to do that. And I want to say good luck. I want to wish good luck to you in the weekend. Is it challenge?
So it's the super qualifier, top two qualified for the pro tour, and it's on Friday night. So yeah, thanks very much.
Yeah. Any other socials, anything else you want to shout out?
Yeah, as always, everyone, I've been, you know, Harry13 Martin Porter. You can find me on Twitter at Harry13SEO. That's Sierra Charlie Oscar. You can also find me on Twitch, the same tag, Harry13SEO. And if you ever want to look at our Patreon pages for the team, Tac Team 9, you can find that at Tac Team 9 on Twitter as well. And once again, thanks for having me on, guys. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you for joining us. This is great.
Anytime.
All right, that's going to wrap up our show here. Thank you guys so much for listening. We look forward to being your go-to source for Pioneer information online. The first Pioneers podcast is slinging out.